everyone. My name is Caroline Hines. I'm a film critic and journalist. And this episode, I'll be talking with filmmaker Jay Rosenblatt about his three films, How Do You Measure a Year, Human Remains, and When We Were Bullies, which are being screened at the 2023 Busan International Short Film Festival. And this interview is for the K-Crush American magazine, which I'm covering the festival on behalf of. So I'm so happy, first of all, to have Jay join me to talk about this festival and his involvement with it. And not only as a presented filmmaker, but as someone who has an extensive filmography in Hollywood, but also internationally, because your films have shown at international film festivals and is showing at the Busan Short Film Festival, because for this year, 2023, the U.S. is the guest country, you know? So like every year they have a different country that is featured and highlighted. And for this year, it's the U.S. And for you, Jay, I want to first ask you, I usually like starting my interviews by asking my guests to say a bit about themselves, like what inspired you in particular to become a filmmaker? Because from looking at some of your films and also going through your filmography, your films touch a lot on human emotions, you know, things like grief, emotional disconnect, you know, trauma and past circumstances and how the things that happened in the past affects us in the future and affects us now as adults. You know, I find a lot of your stories focus on like childhood and then adulthood. So I want to ask you first, what got you into filmmaking, and then what led you to defining your, I guess you could say, your identity as a filmmaker?
Sure, Carolyn. Well, first of all, I was in a master's degree program for counseling. I wanted to be a counselor, a therapist. And I took a film class, a Super 8 film class, just for fun. And I fell in love with it. And even though I finished my degree in counseling, I continued to make films. I took another full year class, the second year of my counseling program, in 16 millimeter film. And I found that I was spending more time in my film classes than in my degree, counseling degree classes. So after I got that degree, I decided to continue with film. And I think what you're pointing out about my films is correct. They're very psychological, emotional, dealing with different traumatic issues, grief, loss. And I think basically the same motivation for being a counselor stayed with me for being a filmmaker. And that has to do with just wanting to help in the healing process, a different way, completely different with film, but still at least being able to have some role. So when hopefully, not all my films, but for many of my films, when somebody sees them, I'm hoping that something will stir in them and maybe that they'll be a catalyst for them to deal with some issues that are unresolved for them.
Right. I think it's interesting. I am always fascinated with filmmakers and people involved with the film industry and learning their backstories and like how they got onto the path of being creatives in the film industry, because no one's story is ever the same. And everyone's, and a lot of people, and I think most filmmakers and even writers that I've interviewed rarely ever started out with the intention of being a filmmaker. You know, a lot of them started out having another career that was like completely opposite to the film and entertainment industry. You know, like as you said, for yourself, you started out in college and you got your degree to be a counselor and a therapist. And a lot of people may think, okay, that like those two things are kind of like diametrically opposed to each other. But I actually think that film to me is very relatable to therapy and to counseling, because like for me, when I'm going through something in particular, like, you know, if I'm having, cause I'm disabled, I have MS, and I also have depression, and I also have seasonal affective disorders. I have all these issues, but when I'm going through like a cognitive episode or even a depressive episode, sometimes it's hard for me to communicate, you know, with other people, and it's hard for me to take information, but I can find comfort in watching something. You know, I can find a way to relate not only to the story, but I can use that story to relate to other people. You know, for instance, if it's a film that other people have seen, or even a drama or a TV show other people have seen, I can say, okay, this particular plot point in this film or in this show and the story, I can relate to, you know, and it can help people understand where I'm coming from, but it also helps me to relate to other people, you know, and like, especially if you're people from different races and different ethnicities and different cultures. And we always talk about music is the one form of communication where you don't have to be able to speak the language to understand the story that's being told. And I think film is like that, you know, like sometimes, even if you don't understand the dialogue, because I do that. Sometimes I watch films in another language and if it's closed captioning is available, I'll still watch, you know, and like, even though I might not understand like specific nuances in the story, I can watch the story and I can still get what the story is about, you know, because I can read the actors' faces, you know, I can read what is like, their costume tells a story. The cinematography tells a story, you know, like the lighting, all of these things tell a story. So I can see how you would gravitate towards film as another medium of counseling and therapy, especially in your stories. So talk to me first about your first story that you made, your first therapy session that you made as a film, because I kind of see your films as a therapy session, not only for the subjects, but also for yourself.
Yeah, interesting. Well, it's funny because the second student film I made was called The Session. So when I was, the very first few films that I made, I was really trying to combine what I was doing in counseling with filmmaking. In The Session, which it's not a film that I really show because it's very amateurish, but there's a mime who's the therapist. And the patient comes into this, you know, therapist's office and sits down and tells him that he's like, feels boxed in. And the mime, you know, does the whole mime thing. So the mime is like kind of relating to him through mime. And through that process, there's a breakthrough for this depressed patient. So that was really early on. And then I made some other films that dealt with just psychological issues as a student, my student films. Once I graduated, one of my first films that kind of, I would say was more successful, showed at some big festivals, was a film called Short of Breath. And that film begins with what appears to be a therapy session. So I brought in that aspect of my interests visually in a lot of my early films and some of the later ones too. But interesting what you said about watching films sometimes without even the language. I mean, film is a very visual medium in most cases. I would think for some films that would be difficult to understand what was going on, like very talky films, like an Eric Rohmer film, that might be hard to watch without subtitles. But, you know, some really great films, you can pick up what's going on because, you know, film started as a silent medium and silent films. Yeah. So I can appreciate what you're saying. But I think, you know, sound, dialogue, music, sound effects, they're all really enhance a film experience. So, you know, whenever possible, I think it's good to be able to understand what's being said.
Oh, for sure. Especially this one is.
But I think it's a good exercise for students to turn off the sound and just see, is a film working visually? You know?
Yeah, no, that's kind of like my philosophy because, like, we're like for instance, like you're talking about films that in another language, for instance, you know, there is like the whole, there's been a whole discussion of, you know, like people getting used to reading subtitles, especially North Americans getting used to watching films with subtitles. And like I also have audio processing issues. So I always use subtitles or closed captioning if they're available just for that reason, just because I'm disabled that way. But the other thing about, like you mentioned, and I was going to mention, is like the first films that were ever created were silent films. You know, everyone that ever saw those silent films had to watch these films without dialogue, you know, and then once the technology advanced where dialogue could be added, where a film score could be added, you know, where you could have the sound editing coming and give you the audio for like sound effects and this kind of stuff. Like that, as you said, enhances the storytelling. And like for your films, like there's so many things that enhance the storytelling. Like for you're like, what, like one of the things that really struck me about the short film that's being presented for the festival is how do you measure a year, the one featuring your daughter Ella. And because I'm also a very visual person, I always pay attention to like small details. And one of the things that really struck me about this film is like, even as she grows, you know, as she, like you followed her from like her first birthday up to the up to 18 years old. But even as she grows, I noticed the setting didn't change, you know, like you didn't change the painting in the living room where you did the interviews with her. Like the sofa stayed the same throughout the years. It gradually got faded because like the sunlight is coming in through the window. So the color of the sofa gradually changed. And that's where, for me, I wondered if that was intentional, if you and your wife perhaps ever thought of like redecorating the living room. You're just saying, no, this is my set. This is for continuity purposes, right? So I did want to ask you about that because I find for your films that like you do pay attention to the details. Like I watched the one, not only when we were bullies, like the details of adding like the pictures and how you did the editing of that, like the note papers and tearing papers, a lot of that reminded me of how we do school. You know, like those things reminded me of school. So I wanted to ask you first about just like creating the details in your films to enhance the stories that you're telling.
Yeah, sure. Well, let's talk about the first one you mentioned, which is how do you measure a year? There's one thing I have to correct you. At age 15, the sofa changes.
Does it?
Yes.
Yes.
So from I think 2 to 15.
It's the red sofa. Yes.
It's the same sofa. And I really wanted to keep it that way. But you mentioned my wife and she said, we've got to get a new couch.
Yeah.
So, you know, I gave in to that. And some people, that's the first thing they say to me. They say, I was wondering if that couch would ever change. you know, I really wanted to keep it there. The same. Obviously, I had to change it for family reasons, but that same desire came through with the equipment I was using. Mm. I used a very old camera, what became a very old camera. When I started using, when she was two, we started the film when she was two. And I have this, it's called a Sony PD150. It's a DV cam. It's handheld. Well, I had it on tripod some of the time, but it's an old, you know, you put tape in.
The video, yeah, the old school ones. I always wanted one.
It wasn't digital. And I stuck with that camera until she was 18, okay? I had a newer camera, a digital camera, probably about the same time we got a new couch, but I didn't want to change the look of it. Mm. I wanted it to be very consistent. So even though I wasn't even sure the camera was working well, I stuck with it until the very last year. Yeah. Very last year, I decided I could maybe make a case for changing it because it was the last year. And I also filmed with two cameras. So I used the old camera and I used the new one. And then when I was editing it, I decided that I actually could use the new camera to my advantage. And if you remember in age 18, when she's actually speaking to the camera without me
in
the scene, the frame widens up,
yeah,
and that's because I use this different newer camera. So you know, that detail, the couch, the camera, that's all very important in that film. That film's very simple, and I didn't want to do anything too fancy. I wanted, since so much of it is really about the passage of time, if I kept the frame the same, her size in the frame, the couch, the room, I felt like we would be focusing more on time passing. If I kept changing the scene, let's just say I had a different idea, I don't think it would be as powerful in terms of this young girl growing into a young woman. And when we were bullies, completely different film. You know, it uses animation, interviews, found footage, live action. It has a very, I would say, complex sound design. I mixed it in a very professional mixing house. I had a sound designer working on that film with me. So it was much different. But the soundtrack is extremely important, extremely important. And the same with Human Remains, the third film that they're showing. The details to the sound are what I think add a whole another dimension to the film.
So we're going to get a little bit in depth about each film, but I want to start again with how do you measure your, because the thing with this film, what really struck me about this film is it's kind of surreal watching someone age on screen without the aid of prosthetics or especially face makeup. You know, like we see ourselves age daily. You know, we look back and we see pictures of ourselves from the time we were kids, you know, like I'm 30 and I'm going to be 40 this year. So I grew up in the age of books, you know, like the family albums and like, you know, the cellophane, like opening up the cellophane and the Polaroids and seeing all of that. Absolutely. And sometimes my mom will send me pictures of my sister and I, cause I'm a twin. And I look back and say, wow, we were that small, like we were that tiny, but like a lot of our face, like we're instantly recognizable because our faces really haven't changed. Mm-hmm. But like we've changed so much over the years, you know, we've grown so much. And in this film, like your daughter Ella, you watch her grow, you know, we the audience get to follow her journey. But then the thing that really strikes me is like how we always, like, you know how we always start, like, and this is one of the questions you ask her in the film, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, like we as human beings, we change our minds so often. Mm-hmm. You know, like children are hopelessly optimistic. You know, like their wants and needs are so simple, but as we get older, our wants and needs become very complex.
Yeah.
You know, and even if the answer is simple, I just want to be happy, which is something she says, like that's the one answer that never changes. You know, for all of the years that you were asking the questions, that's the one thing she never stops saying. She wants to be happy, you know?
Yeah.
But as we get older, the meaning of happiness changes. So I want you to talk about that, the complexities of watching your daughter age in front of you in your daily life, but then watching her change and grow while you're editing the film.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, it was very important to have a ritual for this film, and birthdays are a ritual already. So it just made sense to do that. In terms of seeing her grow up and kind of watching time happen, I think it's more powerful in my film because it's a short film. Mm-hmm. Because all of this happens in 29 minutes. So we're watching someone go from age 2 to 18 in 29 minutes. So each year, we're only seeing about 2 or 3, 4 minutes of her. So you're getting this kind of snapshot, but because the questions kind of remain the same, maybe they change a little bit, we see how she responds. So we're not just seeing her face and voice and body change, but we're also seeing her mind change, how she gets more thoughtful, more complex in her answers to some of the same questions. And you see her struggle with some of the questions early on, and then she's more comfortable with them. So all of that, I think, adds to the pleasure of watching this film. And you know, you kind of want to see how she's going to be next year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main challenges for me was the editing of the film. How do I keep, I mean, obviously there's a structure that's there. I knew it was going to be each year, but how do I keep it moving forward in a good way? Where do I cut into the next year? So finding those moments in the footage was really one of the biggest challenges, but also one of the biggest pleasures. This was a very enjoyable film to edit because, for obvious reasons, I love the subject of the film. So even the outtakes were fun to watch. There's other films I've made where it's just more, even though there's a creative pleasure, it's also more difficult and painstaking. This one wasn't painstaking. It was so pleasurable.
And how has your daughter's opinions of perhaps of your being a director changed by being a part of your creative process, you know, like she's the subject, and especially as a young child, like that's more frustrating because, you know, children just like, they're like, why are we doing this? Like, I just want to go outside and play or whatever. But then as she grows older, like me being also, I went through the teenage years as a teenage girl and like early and my late teens and early 20s, like we it when we, our relationships with our parents change, you know, sometimes you want to be around your parents and then sometimes you don't want to be around your parents. And that comes through in the film. And I thought it was really fascinating that you added in those moments, that you didn't shy away from revealing those very, what could be very like difficult, not difficult things for you to see, not as a director, but as a father. You know, like where you have to say, like, you're like, ooh, that one hurt. Like there's this, like there's one early up, I think she was around 4 or 5, where she, when you asked her question and she said that, yeah, she's afraid, but she afraid of you. And you were just like, why are you afraid of me? And she couldn't answer. And I, in my head, I was just thinking, wow, that must have been so tough for you to hear, especially when she can't articulate why, you know? Yeah. So like for you, like when you have those kind of moments, and even for some that wouldn't have made it into the films, but for the ones that didn't make it into the film, like what was it like for you experiencing those moments as her father, but then also as a director? And you have to realize as a director, this is the purpose of this project. You know, this is why I'm doing this. But then as a father, you're thinking, do I want to show this, you know, to the world? Do I want my daughter to see where these, like what kind of issues she could have been having, you know, like her fears and her frustrations and her anxiety, because like children, people think that children don't have anxiety, but I'm like, they do. And you know, and like you show those things.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the dual role of father, parent, and filmmaker is very challenging for the most part. This was the fifth film I've made with Ella. I made 4 films with her before she turned age 5. So she was a little bit used to the process. But you're absolutely right. When I should say, I didn't look at any of this footage until I was editing it about 2 years ago. I just, every year I would put it away. It was kind of superstitious a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because I was using that older camera, I didn't know if it came out, and it would be crushing to see that it didn't come out or the sound was off. I remember filming her and the sound would cut out and I thought, oh God, is the camera breaking down? So when I finally did start editing it and I saw that that year when she says, I say, what are you afraid of? And she says, you, I'm afraid of you. And I was like, oh wow. You know, I forgot she had said that. I think in the moment I was kind of shocked because I didn't know she was afraid of me. But at the same time, it was clear that I don't know if it wasn't she couldn't articulate it. I think she just didn't want to say.
I wondered that.
And I didn't push her. I didn't say, come on, tell me. You know, I asked a couple of times and then I just wanted to respect her boundaries, and for whatever reason she didn't want to tell me. And I think that's fine. Mm-hmm. There were a few moments. You know, when she's 14, she's kind of having a rough time. And that comes across in the film. When I finished the film and had a rough cut, I actually showed her the film and I said, is this okay with you? I did want to check in with her and make sure that I had her consent to show it. Because she knew from the earlier films that they could end up showing to a larger audience. So she said it was fine. You know, she was a little embarrassed, a few things she said. And I said, well, is there anything you want me to take out? And she said, let me think about it. And gave her some time. She talked to her boyfriend and came back and said, no, just leave it. It's okay. So I think that kind of answers a little bit about it. But being a parent, you know, that's the number one. Filmmaker's number two. I wouldn't want this to affect her in any negative kind of way, making a film about her. In fact, when I made the fourth film about her, it's called Beginning Filmmaking, she really was developing a real personality. And I decided that with that film finished, that I wasn't going to make any other films with her. Just stopped. Even though I continued to shoot her on the birthday, the film, How Do You Measure a Year? I didn't know if that would turn into a film. And I thought by the time I'm finished with that, she'll be an adult and she can tell me if she wants me to do this. But I stopped when she was 5 because I really wanted to respect her privacy. And I was afraid that some people, friends, classmates would see some of the films maybe on TV and say, oh, I saw you in a film. And I didn't know how that might affect her psychologically. So we just stopped. So yeah, parenting first, filmmaking second. But for these films that I've made with her, it was kind of nice to combine the two because, you know, it was very enjoyable to involve her. It was like this father-daughter project we had.
I think it's a great thing to do because, like, it was something that I always wish my mom was able to do with my sister and I, and even our older brother. Is like, I grew up watching like a lot of American films and TV, and like back in the 80s, I remember there was a show, you remember The Wonder Years? And you know, like they'd have shows like that where like you would have to kick the characters with the cameras, you know, like the same camera you're talking about. And I always wanted one of those, like, you know, so I could like do like home videos and stuff, and I'd have home videos to look back on. But we couldn't afford them because in Barbados, those kind of things are super expensive back then. Yeah. So I was always jealous of people to have those kind of the camcorders and stuff to record those home videos. So I think it's a beautiful project that you were able to continue throughout those, especially the most pivotal years of her life, because like from toddler age straight up to 18 is like some of the most significant times of our lives, as you know, like we go through so much changes, you know, we grow so much as people, we grow so much as like, especially as daughters. And this is where you get, and like you mentioned it, like one of the things that you do get to see is how she's developing a personality and she's developing her own identity and her ability to say no, or saying, you know, like, I don't feel like doing this, you know, and that's like, that's where she's forming who she is and who she's going to become. Like, we get to see her face change. And I thought it was so, as I said, it's so surreal to watch her face change from 2 to 18, but we get to see her change mentally and psychologically. And I think that's a beautiful thing to be able to see as a parent, but I think it's also going to be a beautiful thing for her to have to look back on as an adult, you know, like where she'll be able to look back and say, this is how I was as a child.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, until I looked at the footage, I didn't know if I had a film, but I knew in making the film that at the very least she'd have an archive of her growing up. And it didn't matter if it would turn into a film in the end. I mean, I'm really happy it did, but I knew that either way, it was worth shooting this and doing it each year.
Sorry, my dog just busted into my bedroom. Sorry, she was there staring me down.
No. We have dogs here too.
Yeah, I had to call my sister to come and get her. Where was I? I also wanted to, I wanted to ask you about your wife's opinion on the film, not only the end product, but just throughout the years, because we get to see her. I think we see her maybe once or twice, but we get to hear her. There's a moment where she was just like, I'm over this. And she laid down on the sofa. She was just like, I'm completely over this experience. And I heard her wife's voice. She was like, and so talk to me about your wife's perspective throughout the years, but then also on the end product.
Well, you know, she was very supportive of doing it. She knew it was our little thing, so she respected that, tried to stay quiet during that hour and a half every birthday, which was challenging with dogs and you know, and the birthday. And she's, you know, she was thrilled with the end product and very excited. Yeah, no, I think it was a good experience. It's a, you know, it's a father-daughter story. So even though my wife appears in it, I didn't want it to be just the whole family. That's not really what I wanted to do. That would maybe, for this project, wasn't the right choice.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ella does refer to her family a lot. So I thought it was important for us to see her mom and also to see her dogs. And there was one early cut where some of her friends show up on her birthday and they came into the camera, but I felt like it was diluting things a little too much. It was starting to feel a little too home movie-ish, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it works perfectly as just her, and then like you see like your wife at significant moments, and then you at the end, where it's just like you came in. I thought it was like the perfect way to end it, because this is where you stop being the voice behind the lens and you're actually present in the moment. So I thought it was actually a perfect way to end it, because they're just like, now you're not just this avatar, you know, you're not just like the director, like you're stepping in from the position of a director and giving your daughter the hug and the attention that she needs in that moment. Because I think that's probably the most vulnerable she was in the entire film, because like that's when you have stepped to you. You're like, would you prefer to do this after I left? And then the things that she said weren't probably what you were expecting. Like, you know, you like more like she was just like, I love you. You know, she like, I'll miss you when I go off to college. And that was a moment of reflection for her. And yes. and then it was, I just was just like, perfect moment.
I know, it was perfect. I couldn't have hoped for something better. Because I didn't look at the footage right away, I didn't know what she said. So when I watched it and saw that scene, I was just so touched, and I thought, what a gift.
What a
gift to your father, but also to the filmmaker.
I know, right? You're just like, as a filmmaker, you're like, yes, perfect moment. Captured on camera.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. And so now we're gone. So now we're going to transition to talking about when we were bullies, which I think it, in a way, can be also looked at as a gift in another form, where this is a gift of resolution, you know, because in this film, you're talking about an experience that you yourself had blocked out, having experienced like 50 years ago when you were in grade school. And it was a situation of bullying where you like, because this is one of those moments where you're just like, life is so funny. You know, like you heard the voice of this person narrating a short film, and you're just like, I like that voice. I'm going to find this person because I want them to narrate my short film. And then you realize this is a person that not only did you know years ago in school, but you were involved in this one particular situation that affected not only the two of you, but your entire classroom, like an entire classroom of people. Like it had a very significant impact on everyone involved. So talk about the gift of when we were bullies and like how that film turned out into being something that you didn't expect it to be. Like, you know, it was a moment of, I think, like from what I listened, it was a moment of like deep self-reflection for you personally about thinking about who you were as a child and like who you grew to be as an adult. Kind of similar to How Do We Measure a Year, like the same thing with Ella, where it's talking about her childhood, and then this one in essence is also talking about your childhood and like who you were then.
Yeah, well, that, you know, that film, the experience of meeting Richard, my narrator, was so mind-boggling, because this was like 3,000 miles away and like 25-30 years later, and all of a sudden he's reading this, I brought the voiceover script for him to read a few parts of it to see if he'd be the narrator. And then he realizes that we were in the same class. And not only were we in the same class, but the whole point of departure for the film was this bullying incident. And he went right to it. So he remembered it. He had a better memory of it than I did. And he was able to fill in some of the gaps that I had in my memory. And we were just both, like he says in the film, we were shaking because we just could not believe that this felt like more than a coincidence. So years and years later, I was telling that story to a friend of mine. And she said, you know, you should make a film about that. That is such an amazing story. And I thought, yeah, it is a great story. It's a story that I used to tell at film festivals when I would show the first film, The Smell of Burning Ants. Sometimes something would come up and I would just tell this story because it was so remarkable. And then once I decided to make a film that was using that coincidence, let's say, as a point of departure, that's when I had all these other ideas, tracking down my fifth grade classmates and eventually finding my teacher and things like that. So the film grew out of the coincidence, but got to be about much more, about memory, about mortality, about bullying, of course, about complicity, about film ethics too. I don't want to give it too much away, but there's a lot of things that I discovered in making the film. And it's probably, in many respects, the most transparent film I've made, because everything that I am going through in making the film, I bring into the film. So my doubts, my questions, they're all in the film. And things kind of evolved. It took about 4 years to make that film, and things changed as I was making it. Like, for instance, I'll give one example. I just assumed my fifth grade teacher had died. You know, I assumed like she must be really didn't even cross my mind to try to search for her. But then when I was at this grade school reunion party, which is already a strange thing, but
you're in grade school.
I got invited to that while I was making this film. So, and I that's the kind of thing I wouldn't go to normally. I'm not that interested in reunions. But because I was making this film, I said, I have to go to this. And it was at that reunion that somebody, I told people what I was making a film about. And one, not a classmate, but a schoolmate said, you know, Mrs. Brumberg came into an office that I worked in, that I work in Florida. And I thought, oh my God, is Mrs. Brumberg alive? And she said, I think so. She helped me track down Mrs. Brumberg. So everything kind of that evolved in the film, I put into the film. And so it was quite a journey. But you're right, there is some parallels to the How Do You Measure a Year, in that it deals with childhood experiences. We see me as a 10-year-old, then we see me as an older adult getting on. And we see pictures of me, you know, middle-aged, things like that. So there is a little bit of, I would say, reverberation or between the two films, for sure.
Yeah, the thing about this film in particular, as I said at the beginning, the thing that really that I really related to with this film was, like, when I was in school, I was bullied. I was bullied in primary school and I was bullied in secondary school. And I remember, like, growing up, there was always this phrase that would always be said, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words would never hurt. And I've always been adamant that saying makes no sense, because I'm like, words hurt as much as physical blows, you know?
Absolutely.
And when you're being bullied, like, the things that people say and do, like, they stick with you, you know, they stick with you a really long time. And I still remember my bullies, you know, I still remember the things they do, and it's created this, I have zero tolerance for bullying because of that. You know, I have zero tolerance for people being treated unfairly. That's just a part of me, you know, because of how I grew up and the experiences that I went through. But the thing about this film that I thought was, like, was really, I think, profound is the self-awareness that you and Richard and all of your other classmates that you have, you know, because one of the things that people who have gone through bullying, we always think of is, like, the people that bully us, do they ever remember?
Right.
You know, that they bullied us. Do they ever remember? And even if it could have been just one situation, you know, but, like, though, that kind of thing sticks with you. And the thing with this film is that you are willing to reveal this painful chapter in someone's life and the part that you yourself played in it, you know, like, you didn't shy away from it. Because when, like, even when it was suggested that you made this film, you could have been like, you know, I don't think I will, because that's going to reveal something about me that I don't want to reveal, you know, or I don't want to go through. Because, like, I, as myself, as having been bullied, I can see the perspective of the victim, who's like Richard or Dick in this case. But I'm mature enough and I'm self-aware enough to also, like, see how you yourself were saying, as doing some self-examination, you know, some self-reflection and thinking, the actions that I caused could have been more harmful than I realized, you know? And, like, you yourself, you were saying that you kind of blocked it out unconsciously, whereas, like, Richard and the other classmates, they remembered particular incidents, you know? And, like, some things that even, like, and then again, like, I'm always afraid of children as well. Like, some children sometimes aren't aware that what they're doing would be considered bullying, you know? But then as you grew older, you realize, wait, this thing that I did, this is not a good thing. And the film really goes into that. So talk about not only your experience of reflecting on your own self as a person, but also Richard and the other classmates and the kind of interviews that you had, because they would have had to sit with themselves and realize, oh, you know, like, not only what they did in school, but maybe other things they did throughout the years, you know, as adults or as teenagers, and they could have reflected and say, maybe this is a behavior that I need to change, you know, because adults bully as well, you know, like, and some adults don't realize that what they're doing is bullying. So talk about that process for you and Richard and the others.
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, first of all, the The classmates I interviewed, I was very touched by their recollections. Mm. And all of them felt really bad about what happened. Some of them didn't remember it at all, but everyone did remember. I'll call him Dick, just to make it clear, because my narrator's name is Richard also, and that's part of the story. But, you know, they all had some remorse about it, and but they all remembered him. And I did want to say that, you know, I was bullied too, growing up. So you're not only on one side of it. I mean, in my film, I didn't want to say that because I wanted to focus on complicity. And I was certainly complicit in this event. I think most of the class was, according to what people remember. And that's what I wanted to focus on. But I think having been bullied too gave me some empathy and insight into what I was part of in this particular incident. But you're right, it does stick with you. And but sometimes we've been on both sides of it. It's not always black and white, you know?
Yeah, it's not always black and white. Exactly, especially, and that's the other thing, like, another parallel between this and How Do You Measure Your Year is, like, it shows the complexity of children, you know, like, children do have, like, very, like, in like the question, there's a question that you asked and in the film, and it's one that is a through line that kind of stayed with me, and it's something that I've worked with kids, like, even when I first started being a film critic, I was working at a public school with kids, and I've always been like a babysitter and nanny, worked at a daycare, so I've always had a relationship with children, and I've always acknowledged that children are extremely terrifying. Like, children can be very terrifying, but they're also very deep thinkers, and they're very observant, you know, and like in the thing you talked about in the film, like, why, like, kind of like a hierarchical system within the class,
yeah,
you know, like, children, like, what is it about children where if they pick out who the weakest person is, and they're just like, we have to maintain our own position in this hierarchy.
Yeah.
And for them, it's not considered a hierarchy. They don't know, but they know that, you know, if I want to survive in this environment, I'm going to be, and I see someone picking on the weakest person, I have to kind of get into line in essence. So I want you to talk a bit about that and like how the film actually made you, and I want you to put on your therapist hat and your counseling hat, and how your experience with counseling and being a therapist helped you, like, see what you were revealing in the film, you know, like that aspect of childhood and how children think and how children behave.
Yeah, I think that my teacher says it, I think, pretty well when she says kids have a sixth sense, mm-hmm. where they can pick up on vulnerability and weakness, and part of that is you know, I think in our DNA, I think it's important if we have good education and good role models that we don't act on that, but not everyone has that, and there's a mob mentality, sometimes group mentality, picking on one person, scapegoating. I also think that a lot of people that are complicit in bullying are doing it to protect themselves because they're afraid they might get bullied. It's very complex, you know, and in my film, what was one of the key things was just the realization that vulnerability is something that we are always trying to hide, our own vulnerability. And it really is a source of strength. It's not really a weakness, but we're, especially men, are raised to think that being vulnerable is being weak. And in this film, I'm trying to bring out the opposite, that the vulnerability that I recognize in myself, which has to do with my brother's death, was also my connection to the person that we bullied. So, you know, I think that's my kind of aha moment in the film.
Yeah, I think vulnerability is beautiful because it not only allows you to be empathetic and to be with other people, but I think it allows us to be empathetic with ourselves, because like we as you know, the saying goes, we are our own harshest critics. You know, we can be our own worst enemies. You know, we can be the biggest stumbling blocks in our path. And being vulnerable in all aspects, whether it's emotionally vulnerable, mentally vulnerable, whether it's being physically vulnerable, like putting ourselves in situations that we are afraid to step out into, you know, like being afraid to put ourselves in a path and you're not sure what the outcome would be. Like, for instance, like using your own personal experience, like you started out going to school to be a therapist, you got your degree, and then you made the shift to become a filmmaker. And like, that could have been like a potentially terrifying outcome, because you're just like thinking, how do I become a filmmaker? How do I make a career out of filmmaking? So I want you to, we're going to have to wrap it now, but I want us to end off talking about vulnerability as a filmmaker and how like that has helped you become a better filmmaker over the years. And like, especially now that you're older and like you have all of these life experiences and you've made all of these films and all had all of these accomplishments, what does vulnerability mean to you now as a filmmaker?
Well, I think that for me, being very sensitive, trying to be sensitive to other people and to other people's concerns and my own, like looking inside myself, makes my filmmaking more powerful, to be honest, more complex, more layered, more nuanced. I think that, you know, there's all kinds of films, right? But I think the films that I'm interested in making are ones that deal with issues that people are struggling with for the most part. I've made some more fun films, like lighter films, but the ones that I've put, you know, years into are things that are very important to me and I think are important to other people. So again, going back to the counseling background, the motivation is to, and I've used this expression before, somebody told me this at a festival I was at, when I described my film, they said, oh, I see, you are opening up wounds to let the poisons out. Mm. And that really stayed with me. And I feel like that's really part of what I do in my films, is I really want to, you know, get to what our vulnerabilities, what our pain is, what our hurt is, and open it up in such a way to help it release, to get those poisons out.
No, that makes perfect sense, because sometimes the best way for an injury to heal is actually to expose it to fresh air, you know, like let's leave it open and let it heal. So like, I think that's a great way to not only look at filmmaking, but also to be a filmmaker, to see as a way to, as a healing process, whether it be for you or for the subjects or for your audience, for anyone who could watch these films, to sit back and reflect and think, is this something that I need to change in my own life? You know, or think back on a situation that they had and say, do I need to go and apologize to someone? Do I need to go and hold myself accountable in a particular mm-hmm. situation? Do I need to pay more attention to my daughters or my sons or to my children and figure out mm-hmm. what do you need in life? What can I do for you as a parent, you know, or as a sibling? So I think it's great that you as a filmmaker use vulnerability as a part of your filmmaking process. And I wish a whole lot more filmmakers would do it. But
thank you. More humans did it, right?
I'm like, human beings, we need to do so much better. We can be so much better. We really are our own worst enemies. But the medium of film is one of my favorites because it helps us to process things, you know, whether it be grief or even joy. And for your films, like the ones that I've seen, and I hope I'm able to watch some other films, because I love your filmmaking process and I love the way you approach filmmaking and storytelling. So, but thank you so much for taking the time for joining me, and also on your Oscar nominations, because you let your film, How Do We Measure, was nominated for Oscar Short Film. So congratulations for that. And like, it's showing at the Busan Short Film Festival. So like, congratulations on that, and for taking the time to talk to me about your work.
My pleasure, Caroline. It's been my pleasure. Thank you.